Free Radio Santa Cruz is a community-supported, non-commercial, unlicensed radio station broadcasting on the airwaves of Santa Cruz, California at 101.1 FM and to the global community online at freakradio.org. We do not do pledge drives, we do not broadcast advertisements, and we do not have sponsors or underwriters. We pay our own rent, expenses, and bills as a collective, and we get by thanks to the support of our member DJs and journalists. If you listen to Free Radio, if you use the webcast, if you like hearing local programming, if you're grateful to hear Democracy Now! Every day, if you appreciate the uncensored news, non-commercial music, and underrepresented commentary that airs on Free Radio, please do what you can to support the station by sending encouragement to FRSC at freakradio.org or by leaving a message on our voicemail, 831-427-4523, or by sending a donation to Free Radio P.O. Box
7811,
Santa Cruz, California 95061. Our website has a PayPal account where you can donate online, freakradio.org. All of these contacts can also be utilized to complain. Thanks for listening.
Pardon me, sir. Can I talk to you for a minute? Say, listen, I haven't eaten for a week. Could you give me a dime for a cup of coffee or something?
Nah, I ain't got no change.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. God bless you, sir. Say, listen, sir. Can I talk to you for a minute? Say, listen. My wife's having a baby, and I gotta get her to the hospital. Can you give me a dime for a bus fare or something? Yeah.
Let go, ma'am, will you?
Please, sir.
Go on, get lost.
Well, thank you very much, sir. God bless you, you bald-headed fart. Excuse me, lady. Can I talk to you for a minute? Yeah, lady, come here. No, I'm not going to hurt you now. Come here, lady. Hey, listen. It's my little kid's birthday today, you know, and I don't have any money. Can you lend me a quarter to buy her a little doll or something? Please, lady.
Well, okay, there you are.
Oh, thank you very much, lady. Thank you. Say, listen. Come here, lady. Listen, lady. It's my other kid's birthday, too. Can you give me a quarter for the other kid? They're twins, you see, and I don't have any money to buy them a present or nothing, you see, lady. Please.
Okay, here.
Oh, gee, thank you very much, lady. Thank you. God bless you, lady. Thank you. Oh, pardon me, sir, you, yeah, come here, fella. Say, listen, fella.
Have you heard the word of God today?
Well, that's all right, fella.
For it is written, open up your heart and the Lord will come unto you.
Sure, partner, sure, I believe you.
He can save your soul, sir.
Yes, excuse me, partner.
You know, before, I was all messed up on drugs. But since I found the Lord, now I'm all messed up on the Lord.
Yeah, I can see that.
He can help you, too. Have you talked to Jesus lately?
Oh, sure. I talked to him this morning.
He would like to hear from you, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll write him a letter. Listen, I got to go.
For it is written,
sir.
Suffer the little children to come unto me.
Yeah, I read that.
For thine is the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah. You don't say.
Yes, sir. Jesus saves, you know.
Yeah, well, I believe that. I believe that, sir. Sure. I love him, too. Sure. Yeah. Excuse me, sir. Say, listen. Come here, partner. Yeah, you. Come here. Say, listen. I'm Father Damien. I'm collecting for the missionary church over in the islands there. I wonder if you could give me a quarter, sir. Please. Thank you very much, sir. Hey, gee. Thank you. Jesus loves you, sir. Jesus loves you. Pardon me, sir. Have you heard the word of God lately? Yeah. Say, listen. Jesus loves. Oh, thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Oh, sir. Hey, have you heard the word of God?
Hi, this is Uncle Dennis, producer of the Earth First Update, wanting to invite you to tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz on Friday afternoons from 1 to 4:30, where we present environmental programs from around the world. Starting off at 1 o'clock with Radio EcoShock, we visit the world of changing climate. And at 2 o'clock, we go to Costing of the Earth from the BBC4. At 2:30, we present Eco News, a report from the North Coast Environmental Center produced at KHSU in Arcata, California. At 3 o'clock is the Earth First Update, produced by yours truly, bringing you all the environmental news you need to know. At 3:30, we present Terra Verde, produced at the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California. And at 4 o'clock, Sea Change Radio. I'd like to invite you to tune into any of all of these programs right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org.
Commander.
Yes, come in, number one. Sit down.
I understand we're under a planetary emergency. Is this about that?
Yes, number one. Central Command at Small World Radio has ordered us to the safest possible location and to begin transmitting the truth to the agents of love around the world. Apparently, everyone is being activated and are prepared to save the world.
Yes, sir, Commander. Shall we broadcast on our pirate transmitter at Freak Radio 101.3 in Santa Cruz?
Precisely, Number One. And throw the switch on worldwide internet.
Smallworldradio.net. Got it.
Listen, Number One. This isn't going to be easy. It's the heaviest task anyone is ever going to ask of you.
Just name it, Commander. The future of humanity is at stake.
Precisely, Number One. Before you sound the alarm, I want you to calm yourself. Find your center and pull up your feminine side. Now take a deep breath. We're going in.
$500 reward to you for helping us find a new Free Radio studio location. We need something urgently. We are gone out of here on the 20th. Need about 200 square feet of location. We can build this little shack. We can use someone's shed. A closet, perhaps. We do need a bathroom. We need electricity. And we can wire that in as well. Again, $500 to the person that finds such a location. We need it for about a year. Contact us at frsc@freakradio.org. Online, freakradio.org. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And the $500 goes to you.
Up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz is the August 30th edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's a two-hour edition show concerned with sort of doings around civil rights for poor people, rent control, police activity, public accountability by the city council and city council members and city council candidates and things like that, trying to cover a lot of recent stuff. But, well, for reasons I will describe, it's going to be not so hard to listen to, but probably a tough haul for me, and I hope it doesn't translate into difficulty to hear. So we'll see. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, Thursday the 30th. No phone in, but 423-4833 is a sort of a comment line you can call on, or if you want to be included in the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, or the Free Radio Santa Cruz announcements of my the shows when I put them out. I usually kind of summarize the shows on these emails in case you want to get a kind of a quick peek, there we go, about what's coming up. You can do it that way. Give me a call at 423-4833 or send me an email at rnorse, that's R-N-O-R-S-E, rnorse, number three, rnorse3 at hotmail.com. So, it's been a busy week. My ailing audio recorder is getting much more problematic, and that's why the quality of the audio you're going to be hearing may not be up to its usual low standard. And it's pretty low anyway, because I'm sort of an amateur in this issue, even though I've been doing it for so long. I don't get the big bucks for doing this kind of stuff, this kind of work. In any case, there's been numerous things happening. There was a sort of a exchange of issues on different voter initiatives, including rent control measure M, which interested me. And I guess it was the police department's community room. I think it's the Women's Democratic Club that where they had a discussion. I don't know what their outcome was, whether they favored it or not. But and the actual debate itself, I did not get on audio, strangely enough, even though my audio was sitting right there supposedly recording, but apparently it failed the test. But I did get some different opinions on it, which you'll hear. Also, I did some recording at the Tuesday shitty council meeting, as I like to characterize our city council, or their city council, if you will. The city council had two periods that were interesting, and again, recorder problems, but I think I'll be able to get some of it, and I'll be playing some of it probably on Sunday at the longer show, which begins at 9:30, goes off until 3 in the afternoon on Free Radio Santa Cruz. But I did get some commentary from some of the folks afterward, and I thought it was quite telling. The two issues that came up were the bathrooms, which I and others have been raising along with the Conscience and Action Group, which met on Wednesday and decided to slate a protest. Tentatively scheduled for the city council meeting, or the right before the council meeting, on the 25th of, I guess it's September. I think that's the council Wednesday, or council Tuesday, I should say, that's coming up in that month, the second council meeting of the month. It's every Tuesday, first and second and third, no, second and fourth Tuesday evenings. It used to be evenings, actually. Now it's afternoons, and even sometimes beginning at noon or even earlier. In any case, I'll give you more on that as it develops, because we want to double check on the times and so forth. But there was considerable sentiment to get a protest going and to get a wide variety of people, because there were far more people were interested in this than I thought. I'm used to people signing petitions or else ignoring the petitions, but we got a significant number at the rent control forum about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. That was at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and then at Drew Glover's kickoff rally, which I mentioned to you, at Loudon Nelson Park, at Laurel Park. And then more recently at the city council chambers itself, people who had come to talk on other issues at the oral communication period at 5:30, the teeny tidy bit that they squeeze in at the end of their "we've got an agenda and we're prepared to shove it down your throat." That oral communications period actually had people talking about bathrooms that I'd never seen before, and that had come to talk about something else, the lack of bathrooms, the closing of the Loudon Nelson Community Center bathroom, essentially to make it unwelcome for the homeless and to set up a do-not-disturb middle-class residence in their right to feel free from the sights and sounds of poverty in Santa Cruz. With the excuse, of course, of vandalism and expenses and so forth, none of which is proved in any significant way by the emails that Izeth Ray, the manager of the Loudon Nelson facility, gave me. And she actually just called me. She's a very courteous woman. She's polite. She's responsive, too. I didn't really expect a call from her today. But she called in to let me know that my complaint, which is what I went in there, and you're going to hear this shortly, and my companion who was with me, an older woman, wanted to use the bathroom, and they wouldn't let her. Was it out of order? No, I don't think. You know, was she a threat to the local population there? No. Had she caused a disturbance in the past? No, not that I know of. But, of course, they would not let her because their new policy is discriminatory and hostile towards everyone who is not using the facility's either paying for it or part of an event that's slated there. And they have all kinds of sort of vague excuses. Oh, it's been illegal behavior. Well, you're going to hear Izeth Ray talking about this. And actually, I think I'll play that to begin with so you can get a sense of, you can judge yourself of who's in the right, who's in the wrong, or what should be done. I, of course, have pointed out time and time again that people need bathrooms. If they don't have them, they'll do what they have to do. And, I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me. But There are some folks who believe that by cutting off the most essential kinds of services, you can drive away or make disappear people you don't want to see around. And that is not unique to Santa Cruz. So let's see if you can hear this attempt to get a bathroom use at the Loudoun Nelson Center. And I guess this happened 3 or 4 days ago.
It is August 27th, about 10:35. Loudoun Nelson Center. I'm okay, a little tired and cranky. How about you?
Hi.
I'm tired. Looking for the code for the bathroom so we can use it.
Are you participating in the program?
Certainly not.
Well, unfortunately, I can't give out the code unless you're participating with the program here.
And who gave you those orders?
Came from my supervisor.
What's his or her name?
Her name is Iseth Ray.
I always mispronounce it. Say it again.
Iseth Ray.
Iseth Ray. I've seen it in the emails, but I don't know how to pronounce it. Is she here?
I believe so. Would you like to speak to her?
Sure, that would be good.
Thank you. Just a second.
We're standing at the Loudoun Nelson.
Robert Norris.
At the information board.
Okay. She'll be out in just a moment.
Sounds good. What's your name?
My name's Emilio.
Loudoun Emilio.
Which of those two? What's your name?
Gloria.
Nice to meet you. Hello.
So what events do we have coming up that I could pretend to be a part of?
We have our bulletin board right there. It'll show you what's going on today, daily activities. And we also have a little brochure right here that also lets you know what's going on throughout the week.
That's good. That's good.
It's right here available.
So where do you direct people to take a dump? On the lawn out front? Or what do you suggest people do?
I wouldn't suggest that at all.
No, I mean, where do you, if somebody comes in and says, I want to use the bathroom, do you have anybody?
I recommend the public restrooms.
Which would be?
One down at Depot. I know that the police department, sometimes their community room is available as well.
Do we know what the hours are? Because we tried the police community room last time without
success. I don't specifically know their hours there, but I know that the Depot Pride Park building, their bathroom's open pretty much 24/7.
It is...
Now, the depot actually is many blocks away, or a number of blocks away, so it's not an easy option. And the community bathroom sometimes available, sometimes not. One of the questions I wished we'd asked, and perhaps we will in the future, because I've encouraged people to go down and ask to use the bathroom at the Loudoun Nelson, ask for the code, and... Ask, you know, if you're disabled, if you're handicapped, if you're elderly, they don't care. They're just going to send you somewhere else, as though they were a private business instead of a taxpayer-funded community center.
Rise to Sunset, yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Azeth, I'm Robert.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I've read many of your emails.
Okay.
So we'd like to use a bathroom. She has to use a bathroom. I'd like to get their code to go in.
Okay, are you attending a class or a program with us today? Okay, and unfortunately our restrooms are closed to the public right now. Due to illegal activity and unfortunate circumstances that have led to us making that decision. Certainly not. I don't make that judgment about anyone.
See, I used to come in here to use the bathroom. So I needed, you know, when I was over here because of that, this one was available.
I'm going to pause briefly to point out that both the worker behind the counter and Iseth, who came out to talk to us, stated, are you using the Loudoun Nelson today? And I think one possible answer for those people who just don't want to crap in their pants and who need to use the bathroom or who feel this is outrageous and want to use it just as a matter of course is
Later in the afternoon, I believe I'll be attending something, and you can ask what events are happening, and then say, or say, I may be attending something later today. I'm not sure. I think it may well be the case. And if that's an that's going to be an option for me, and see if they still attempt to stop you from using the Loudoun Nelson bathroom. And you might say, well, what's the problem? Go to some other bathroom. Why make a big deal of this? For me, the issue is that this is a part of a general plan to exclude a certain group of people and to privatize public facilities. I don't like it. I don't support it. And I think it's a menace to the general community. It certainly is a menace to poor people, an attempt to exclude them and drive them, essentially drive them out of the city in the sense that it makes it far more difficult for them to just be a part of the general community life as this happens. So let's hear a little more.
It is an unfortunate circumstance. I do have a list of other open available public restrooms if you'd like to look at that and point you in the direction of some.
It's not an unfortunate circumstance. It is a conscious decision made by Izeth Ray. A conscious decision made by her and she later explains a number of people together. But if you look at her emails, she is the one who's been pressing the issue in terms of concerns about people camping in the Laurel Park, a desire for a wrought iron fence. I don't know, actually, or certainly no objections to any of this. And she is the responsible party, at least the top of the little pyramid down there at Loudoun Nelson.
It is.
It is an unfortunate circumstance. I do have a list of other open available public restrooms if you'd like to look at that and point you in the direction of some. We actually have one, the PD restroom is usually open, and we can actually check the schedule for you to see if that's not the case. Sometimes it's closed if they have certain trainings happening.
How frequently are they open?
I think that's usually the case that they're open.
Now, the question to answer or ask here is, and get answered, is, well, if it's not open, will you let us use the bathroom down the hall, please? And, of course, it's always, you think afterward of questions you should have asked and maybe will in the future. Also, the other bathrooms I've mentioned before are quite a distance away. And if you're elderly or disabled or, you know, ill, it's not going to be easy for you to deal with. And it's, as one of our conscience and action speakers, Phil Posner, put it, it creates suffering. Not if you're an upper-middle-class person who has money to go to a cafe nearby. Even if you are, can hold your water long enough to get to the metro, they may be closed for cleaning. Because that happens with reassuring regularity. But I don't know how reassuring it is when you need to use one and it's not there.
If they have certain types of trainings in the building that involve youth, then they'll
Is that frequent?
She's talking about the
police
department.
I'm not sure of the frequency, but we can take a look at their calendar and see if it's open.
I'd be curious for next week what the story is with that, if you have that.
For PD?
Yeah.
You can imagine hopping from leg to leg while with a bathroom essentially 100 feet away or less. You're told that they're going to check the schedule of the bathroom next door to see if they're open. It's really kind of a grotesque, Kafkaesque situation, but one which sort of demonstrates the power of some governmental authorities to misuse public funding and public power on behalf of a rather narrow and, I think, bigoted agenda. And I don't like it. I hope you don't either.
Because it's the nearest bathroom.
I believe that the laundromat has an open restroom, and possibly La Hacienda as well. And then we also have the restrooms at Depot Park.
So she's talking about again, a bathroom a block away, which certainly is closer than the Bee Depot Park, which is three blocks or long blocks away. I don't know how many blocks, but it's a very long block. There isn't much in the way of street divisions along Center Street up in that direction. But I don't know that the Ultramat will necessarily let you use its bathroom unless you're a customer, and even then you may find it out of order. No idea about the market across the street that she talks about, but the notion of requiring the public to go to put a burden on private businesses, and also to essentially, it's essentially a way of saying, don't even ask us again sort of thing, unless you are a part of the select group that's using a particular event here, even though, as I said, you're paying taxpayer dollars for this thing, and it's always been a Santa Cruz tradition to have this place open.
Again, your name is...
If you go into Outlook...
Yeah. And right now they're looking to see if...
the calendars.
See if they can find the actual bathroom hours of the police station or the actual open hours of the police station. It goes without saying that not all homeless people are comfortable or poor people going into the police station. Maybe they have a warrant for sleeping or a failure to pay, you know, which is a frequent occurrence.
Depending on what we find out here online.
So you have another picture.
Morning.
So I believe there's nothing that I'm seeing that would indicate that their restrooms would be closed today.
Wait.
I did speak over at PD. I did speak with the one of the schedulers, and they said it is usually only if they have like a teen academy or a PD training.
Do you know what their hours are at the police station?
Their business hours?
Because that's, I presume you can't get in until closed.
I believe it's 8 to 5. I'm not
8 to 5. Maybe 8 to 4. I'm not sure. So, who made the decision to close the bathrooms here? You know?
It was a collective decision. I mean, it was made by the director.
Director is?
At the time, was Mauro Garcia.
So, in March, he was the director. I guess it was the end of February, I suppose. Was this done primarily on your recommendation, or was it done, he took the initiative after having, you know, received information and concerns from you?
That's true, yes. Yeah.
Got a complaint form, because that's what I want to fill out.
A complaint form?
Yeah. The bathroom should be open. We need to use it for others.
Do you know?
And I should point out that for those who are making inquiries of Izeth Ray or one of her subordinates there, if you're asking a question like, you know, who made this decision, don't let her off the hook like I just did by saying, or did you do it after consultation? You don't want to provide her with an opportunity. If she made the decision or she didn't make the decision, then give her the opportunity, in fact, the responsibility of saying, I didn't make that decision, someone else did. Or I was instrumental in, I joined in that decision, or I supported that decision, or I didn't support it. That's what you want to get, because I believe the people who make these decisions have to be held accountable for the decisions by the public. And sometimes ordinary channels of complaint, of which we're trying to use here with a sort of a written form which I left and which she called me back again earlier this afternoon, as I mentioned, though without any indication there was a change in policy. Ordinary channels of complaint often don't work. If there's a sort of insulated, buffered sort of backroom group that makes these decisions, that out of sight, without public input, without public voter discussion, without consideration of the implications this has for people who need this, without considering alternative facilities and making them available. So it's often important to really hold folks accountable who are doing this kind of thing by name, by position, in person, in front, and I would say even sometimes loudly and clearly and persistently, because they have to know they can use the bathrooms anytime they want, and they're comfortable all day in that regard. The fact that they are letting other people suffer in discomfort. And often it can produce public health consequences, too, both to the individuals who aren't allowed to use the restrooms and to the rest of the community that has to deal with people who can't use sanitary facilities in a sanitary way and so have to do sort of more improvised activity that leaves debris, shit, and piss wherever they happen to have to be. I'm saying the obvious again. But the obvious apparently isn't clear enough for these folks unless it's, should we say, I was going to say shoved in their face or at least made very clear to them. I think right now they're looking for forms for me to fill out.
So when does the schedule go up here? Because I see there's only one. Is that the only event today?
Our weekly schedule?
Yeah.
Turn around and
right now. This one?
Excuse me, that's the daily schedule, and then we have a printout for our weekly schedule.
Now, the point here is there's a neon kind of display on the wall which gives you the schedule of events. It didn't when I came in, but then apparently it did. Maybe it kind of flashes on and off. It seems to me that, you know, you could easily say you can name an event and say that's an event I will be attending. You can always change your mind, say I've decided not to attend it. You didn't have to plan to attend it when you walked in and were suddenly, you know, aware that you had to use a bathroom and they weren't going to let you use one unless you're claiming to be part of an event. Now, I'm curious, and this is something I haven't found out, whether they will require documentation that you're part of an event. That will be an interesting thing to find out, and perhaps we will do that in the times ahead.
Right. Which, thank you. Appreciate that.
You can start with me if you want.
Isaac, may I write me a proper?
Isaac.
Hungarian
friend. No. It's a combination name.
Oh, really?
It's a Bill Elizabeth.
You're stuck with it.
I'm not stuck with it. I'm going to have it.
Okay. All right, so I have your email, I think. Should it be sent to you or should it be sent to someone else? What's your thought?
I'm the supervisor, so you can send it to me, and if I feel I need to share it, I can.
Who do you answer to?
Right now, my direct supervisor is Rachel Kaufman. She's the recreation superintendent interim, and if it goes up beyond that, it's Charles Burridge, the director interim.
And Rachel Kaufman's email is rkaufman@cityofsantacruz.org. Oh, boy, let me double-check on that one. It's .com, not .org. So it's rkaufman@cityofsantacruz.com. Similarly, it's Isbeth Ray. But these emails, you know, these complaints, which I'm encouraging people to do because it's a proper form to follow, I think a much more effective approach is to join protests that are happening around this issue and find creative ways of essentially creating public pressure on this issue. I mean, there's no reason why the city with millions of dollars to spend can't keep bathrooms open. It's an example of some sort of, to me, petty surrender to a group that wants to make sure that homeless people are discouraged, and if not discouraged, severely contained. And it's primarily, I think, about homeless people. It's not about the real comparative costs of keeping bathrooms open versus shutting them down, because if you close them, you have to clean up the mess that happens outside. I mean, again, must I say any of this again and again? I think I'm going to leave it there with this particular recording. You know, there's more of kind of details of my you know, getting a. They don't really have a complaint form. They have a form about how has your experience been at Loudoun Nelson with a particular event. Not, you know, did you develop hemorrhoids because they wouldn't let you use the bathroom here, or have a you know, a hysterical fit of rage because of that, which creates a lot of frustration and a lot of unnecessary hostility. And it's more important, it's an action that is part of a general bad, darkening policy here in Santa Cruz. Let's take a musical break to throw a little lightness into the scene.
We are back, and I'm joined now by a very special guest, the President of the United States. Are we still going with that title? Yes? They're telling me yes? Okay, still good. Welcome, Mr. President. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you must be very busy cleaning out your desk. It has been quite a dramatic news week for you.
They make up lies. I've seen it many times. They make up things.
I mean, two former employees convicted, one implicating you as a co-conspirator in his crimes, a public feud with your attorney general, friends and allies, even doormen flipping on you left and right.
I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching Flippers.
Such a good show.
Look, I didn't know Manafort well. He wasn't with the campaign long.
Well, then why don't we start with your former attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen?
I always found him to be a nice guy.
Were you aware of the hush money payments he is now saying were financed by the campaign per your instruction?
They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments. But they didn't come out of campaign.
Did they come out of the campaign?
They didn't come out of the campaign, and that's big.
Huge.
Because that could be...
Illegal?
A little dicey.
Or illegal.
But they weren't... It's not even a campaign violation. If you look at President Obama, he had a massive...
Pecker. David Pecker, your friend and CEO of the National Enquirer, has recently been granted immunity in the Cohen investigation and is said to have a lot of dirt on you.
I don't know. I've always had controversy in my life, and I've always succeeded. I've always won.
Well, some say you're about to win, most likely to get impeached.
I'll tell you what. If I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash.
If you ever got impeached?
I think everybody would be very poor.
Why, if you ever got impeached, you would...
You would probably start crying, then rehash all the lying and rhetoric you've preached. All the Dems would be smirking. Jim Acosta would start twerking if you ever got impeached.
If I ever got impeached...
You could just give in to Mueller, then go and get some color by lying on a beach. This is all natural, right? With the crimes you've been fixing, you could be another Nixon if you only got impeached.
I think the market would crash.
You'd be through and take with you our worries and our strife. You'd return to only burdening your wife. And we'd resume a normal life. Find a lawyer, cause you'll need one. Write a book or learn to read one. Or get your eyebrows bleached, cause... Just relax at the spa, go fuck yourself at Mar-a-Lago if you get impeached.
I don't know how you can impeach somebody who's done a great job.
You'd be more than implicated for laws you violated and protocols you breached.
Because without this thinking...
We could finally all stop drinking if you ever got impeached.
I think everybody would be very poor.
We would dance and sing and revel. No one else has hit the level of infamy you've reached. Giuliani could retire. Pence could join a gay men's choir if you ever get impeached.
The president did nothing wrong.
When you flee, take Huckabee. And finally I'll be calm. I'd ask Michael Avenatti to the prom. And Kellyanne could move to Guam. More than half the country's waiting. So think about the ratings. Cause when you gave your speech, we would all tune in to listen. You could finally go to prison.
I'm not involved. I wasn't charged with anything.
If you ever got impeached,
I think everybody would be very poor.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
So I'm on the line with Brent, and this is Brent Adams of the Warming Center and numerous other programs. It's afternoon on on Thursday. And then you and I last saw each other at the city council meeting on Tuesday when they kicked down, at least they anticipated getting a lot of money for homeless services. And there was some concerns about the closing of the River Street campground from the people who are in the campground. Of course, actually, it's the expansion and extension of the River Street campground, or the barbed wire campground, as I call it, which nonetheless is better than a lot of the other shelters, but rather expensive. You had some rather strong comments to make, not just about city council, but also about activists who you felt were focusing on the wrong issue. A lot of us talked about the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, myself included. Fire away, old man.
Yeah, well, what's true is going into that meeting, I don't think any of us knew really what they were going to be proposing and voting on. So my initial critique about the activists focusing on bathrooms, well, that's an issue that I've been championing for several years, to the point of cleaning, poop off porta potties for an entire summer myself. What's up and what has been revealed is, what is the plan for $30 million in the near future in the county around homelessness? But what the immediate question was, what are they going to do for winter shelter? And I saw that there was plenty of discussion during public comments about it. And then Chris Crone reached into the deliberation of this, the motion on Tuesday, which had everything to do with what they're doing on they're not going to do the interim shelter for a while. They're not going to be funding the classic winter shelter they have for umpteen years. And they're extending the $1 million tent camp for out to a full year to April. And so when that had been aired in that room, talking about bathrooms was not the topic that we should have been freaking out about. The fact that they proposed they're going to dump 60 beds from shelter. 20 of those go to a tent camp. That has nothing to do with an emergency drop-in camp. That's not emergency shelter. Pauley Loft additionally is not going to be an emergency shelter. So there will be no emergency shelter funded by the city. I'm just putting that out there. And it falls back on me personally as director of the Warming Center program. So when the classic activists are in the room at that point, continuing to talk about bathrooms, yeah, that's when the red light went off. And it took me a full 24 hours to process the information before I sent out an email to you all last night saying, I think you missed the boat. When you look at my video comment, I also kind of missed the boat, because we should have been talking about that the city is, while they're waiting for the massive, supermassive money cannon to show up, they're going to drop the ball on protecting people in the winter. And so that really, to my mind, shows their hand about what's really valuable. They're not really protecting people who need shelter in the wintertime. They didn't bring Warming Center in to talk about it. I think any systems engineer would say you have to have Warming Center in this room, because we're talking about, what are we going to do about the people who sleep outside during the winter? Well, Warming Center always has to be at that table, regardless of whether the director's an asshole or not. Anyway.
Right, hold it. Let's not berate ourselves. But, I mean, I think we've always known for no, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think we should. But we've known for years that the city council, its interest in homelessness is obviously pro forma to me, and, kind of a fig leaf stuff. Because, the vast majority of people, even when there is a so-called winter shelter, provides, as you pointed out, and I know you've been trying to be cautious and not be critical of the winter shelter, but, searches and people getting ill there. I had an interview yesterday with someone, a couple that mentioned almost everybody was getting sick at the winter shelter.
It's hard. At some point, it's hard not to. When you get, when you have an introduction of extremely sick person, and we have a cleaning protocol. They've never shown us a printed version of the cleaning protocol. So that's something we should always be challenging with ourselves. What's your protocol? Warming center, it makes it a lot easier because we're open infrequently, so people don't get sick in the same manner. But, I mean, if you had 100 people at your house every single night who normally sleep out, you would probably have a, you know, a rash of sickness, too.
Have you had that experience at the warming center when a lot of people got sick in any one particular night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of the volunteers get sick. People come in. You're handling the same doorknobs. You can't disinfect the doorknob after every single use. So, and it's actually inappropriate to, you know, disinfect everything you touch prior to touching it. We wear gloves. But at some point, you know, it's in the air. You have 80 people sleeping on the floor in a closed space because it's very cold out. You're going to have some, you know, some cross-pollination of bacteria or whatever, you know, a bug. It's going to happen. Our bigger concern at some point is not so much with general winter sickness and flu. It becomes more towards bed bugs and scabies and other transferables like that, which are can be much more harmful.
Well, I think I mean there are two points that I noted, and I said them both in a rather clumsy and rushed fashion in the 2 minutes they allowed us, which is ridiculous, of course, as usual.
Yeah, you can't get a coherent thought out in 2 minutes.
No, I mean, I mentioned, as you said, when they revealed that they're obviously going to be providing, you know, essentially not just less, but zero winter shelter, a winter drop-in emergency shelter. I made that comment as a part of my kind of sputtering about the issue when I got up there to the mic. Not very coherently, I have to say, you know. But even if they had winter shelter, as they do every winter, as you and I think, and almost every other homeless advocate around, has said, it's, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. You know, it's a small example. I mean, even for a model project like a sanctuary village, you know, it's the beginning, but it doesn't deal with the emergency encampments that you spend time documenting, communicating with, and trying to provide some assistance for when you get some calls at the warming center number.
Well, you have the luxury of speaking about that in broad terms. I would say I have two voices here. One is director of the warming center saying that we just demand that the winter shelter, as tradition, is reinstated, and we will be happy with that. The other voice would say, oh, no, we are far more visionary than these. We actually demand that every single person be provided clean, safe, dignifying shelter immediately, and we know it can happen at much reduced cost than we're already spending, because we can demonstrate that in many other cities when we take a look at what they're spending and the number of people they're sheltering. So I have two voices on that matter.
Run the community, or the audience who's listening, I should say, through kind of very, you know, slowly and carefully the exact appropriations that we're talking about and the numbers involved, because you mentioned it and I've kind of, you know, referred to it, but people, I think, are not really aware of the actual situation that's coming down, because as you said, it was only really clearly revealed insofar as it's actually going to be carried out on Tuesday night or Tuesday afternoon.
They've made it vague. We're not quite sure where money is coming from, where it's going to. Obviously, HSC is going to get some money. We don't know. They didn't talk about expanding. They didn't talk about any budgetary aspect of the tent encampment at all. They just said they're going to be extending it beyond, and I think it's no longer the from the Scott, what was his name's salary, that the assistant city manager who left. They're drawing it from his
Scott
unused
Collins.
Salary, and then Collins. And then because they had declared a shelter emergency, and then they were able to draw the money from the general fund. And they said they only had 3 months. The county paid for the fourth month, and then they said after that, that'll be it. And then they extended it all the way out to October 1st or September 1st. And now they're here saying they're going to extend it all the way out to April without really talking about where the money comes from now. We assume it's the general fund, though.
But the money, I guess we're talking about two large appropriations. One's a bond issue for...
Oh, you're talking about that. I see. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the $30 million that we're referring to? Two different...
Yeah. No, none of the money for the camp and the money they're giving to HSC doesn't come out of this at all. They're dedicating this $100,000 per month for the tent camp, and so they don't have any money left for winter shelter. We realized that. The plan was that they were going to deconstruct the tent encampment and then thereby reinstating a shelter, winter shelter, and or leading toward interim shelter. And then the HSC, we assumed that, you know, they're going to get a quarter
Coral
of this
Street,
money.
For those who don't know, that's the current homeless, I call it the homeless lack
of service. Yeah, but then what you're talking about, some SB2 funds, then you're talking about this other thing, I don't know what it's called. It's HEAP, the acronym is HEAP, H-E-A-P. It's a total of $31 million coming into the county, 9.6 estimated for the city, 21 or something like that for the county. I don't think my math is good there, but and so they're what we see them doing is much like the ocean tide. They're rolling back, they're pulling back into the ocean, leaving everybody to sleep outside. Sorry for the weird metaphors. Only to wait for that huge tidal wave to come in with all this money is going to be showing up. And it's not earmarked specifically for shelter. It's going to be for all kinds of different things, which let me assert only in this space, Robert, that becomes frightening because everyone's going to have their hand in that pot, believe me. And I'm going to try to get a toe in there, too, as the director. I have to try to find a way to have that directed. It's not just for shelter, even though Watsonville did what Santa Cruz did in May. Watsonville did that last Tuesday. They declared a shelter emergency, not a homelessness crisis emergency. So what they're able to do is, so the money's coming in. I don't know what to say about it.
Let me interrupt you for a minute here, Brett, because I'm curious about two things. First of all, the difference between if there is such a thing, between a shelter emergency and a homeless crisis emergency? And then secondly, when did Santa Cruz declare this latest shelter emergency? Do you remember?
So they refused to do it in the 20 recommendations process in April. They said, we will not be declaring a homeless emergency. And then new police chief, new rhetoric, new camping in San Lorenzo Park. And then all of a sudden they came out stating that they're declaring a homeless shelter crisis.
Remember what month that was?
May. At least according to their, I think it was only a month after the 20 recommendations I believe it was April. I could be wrong.
May of last year, you mean?
May of last year, yeah.
Okay.
And they immediately said, and then a few months later, several months later, they said they were not going to do any camping either, no camps. That's why they said they would not talk to us about the transitional camp paradigm all over the Northwest. They couldn't even entertain a conversation. We identified that location where the current River Street camp is, and they said, definitely no, we will never have a camp there. Then, of course, they designed their own camp, and it's the worst design that the country has ever seen, $2,000 per month per tent. That design is atrocious. That they would be extending that camp perpetually, I don't know why people aren't freaking out, pissed off about it.
Also, there's a matter of crowding that camp residents themselves have talked about.
We're spending all the money for a handful of people, and Rochelle Noroyan was the only person who had anything constructive to ask, which is, are we not going to make sure we put a priority on Santa Cruz homelessness? Now, I'm not somebody saying that people who arrive here don't have a benefit to shelters and access to programs, but if you're spending that much money and you haven't decided that you're spending it to alleviate the current homelessness condition, and Tina Scholl said, oh, no, that comes into some sort of legality around what's the legal term?
It's equal treatment or lack of discrimination.
Yeah, which it shows their lack of savvy. They haven't looked outside of the county. They haven't, up in Eugene and Seattle and Portland, there are dozens of these programs. I say dozens. And they all have a filtered several-tier entrance intake policy that people from the community have a first dibs. And then people who've been here for a number of years have second dibs. And if there's any extra bedding, then other people get to come in too. And everyone eventually gets served.
Now, Brent, getting back to the question that I had you, though, because I'm interested in what you're saying as well.
What did you say?
The question was, is there a difference between a shelter emergency and a and a homeless
emergency is something that Sacramento, Seattle, and Portland and L.A. had done. And that allows the city to to take drastic measures. For instance, and you'll love this, suspend the camping ban, legally suspend it. Not change it, not take it off the books, but completely suspend it. They're not able to enforce it anymore. Then they can earmark drastically general funds for all kinds of different types of programs, and they're able to entertain things like tent camps, entertain nonprofit ideas and field different proposals from different nonprofits within the area that are already working on homelessness. The city, right now, you see the city, it's so inappropriate that the city is designing and organizing any of this stuff because they don't have a history, they don't have an eye for it, they're not researching what exists elsewhere. So when we talk about homelessness state of emergency, it just says we're throwing up our hands, we don't know what the fuck to do. We were calling an emergency, and that enables them to do things, outside of the city charter or the normal process. It's outside of the normal budgetary process. So when the city declares in a different way a shelter crisis, that means they're only going to earmark these programs, not for the storage program, not for other creative ways, but only ways that they deem, and they will direct the money. And it is mainly political. What they do is they create this sort of, they have these recommendations, and then they declare their shelter crisis emergency, and then they open up a tent camp for $100,000 a month, and then they're able to like show you how they arrived at that. There were recommendations, there was a decision. Now, even right now, if you got the paper copy of the thing you demanded at City Council the other day, or you look at, which was a paper version of what was up on the screen,
right,
you can see how they create the legitimacy of the asinine shit they're doing right now by showing, way back in May, they started this process forward, and even though they're not going to be providing interim shelter and having any idea what that even means, let alone the described navigation center that's out there 3 or 5 years in the future, but they somehow they're pushing the tent camp back, even though they said they would never, ever, ever do that.
They also, right? As I recall, they planted that tent camp on a space that you were originally contracted to use for storage during last winter.
Yeah, that would be, so we don't care. We've been running a storage program for 3 months. The city has not even acknowledged that in the least bit to date. I did meet with Susie O'Hara. Maybe we talked about that already. Last week. And I have good news. We're moving into. Did we talk about this already? I think we did. We're moving into a fixed location yet to be announced, very near to the nexus of homelessness in Santa Cruz, close to St. Francis Food Kitchen and the Homeless Services Center, along the levee. And we'll be announcing that, I think, September 1st.
That's day after tomorrow.
Yeah, likely. So it'll probably be Monday. We'll do a press release.
So, is this has the number of people in using storage or trying to use storage exceeded your capacity yet? And do you think it's likely to?
Yeah, we thought we had an 80-person capacity because that's the peak number of bins we could fit in our transportable storage device. And then we decided to open up a backup storage unit and then have people who didn't access their bins within the last 30 days, we would move those bins to hard storage. Then we were able to offer an additional bin or two for people who have extra stuff and allow them to have one bin on board and two bins at the hard storage location. Hard storage means they don't get access to it on the daily. They have to check it out, and it'll show up a day or two later. But we've been able to maximize the portable storage facility by constantly shifting things off and only having those people who are either recently signed up or who access the thing, usually on the weekly or the daily. And so it's been effective. We are close approaching 150 users of the program right now.
How many people currently have stuff in storage with you?
Over 100.
And how many do you anticipate as the winter approaches?
With our current facility, we're going to try to cap it at about 250 maximum. And then we can open up an additional storage. As you know, This is what we call good design. We say good design for programs means there's no population cap. We're not trying to say we want infinity of people to arrive at Santa Cruz and use our program. We're just saying that no matter how many people need to use it, we'll accommodate them. That's good design. That's what we demand of city government-funded programs. Good design. Bad design is you take all the money and only serve 50 people like we see them doing. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, I think you did. I noticed that the people who, well, some of the people who came to the city council meeting had, I guess, their concerns met insofar as they were residents of the River Street campground, and they wanted to make sure it wasn't going to be shut down as they feared it was. I think somebody came to the Red Church, Swami, the guy who's a joyful heart, as he calls himself, you know, announced, you know, that there was, you know, I think he wanted people to come to city council and say, save the show.
Well, you might well recognize that.
But let me give you my question. My question is, in your conversations with people in the last couple of days, what's been the general reaction of the homeless community and service providers? Are they, we're so glad the council's got a lot of money for the homeless and is keeping this, adding a few more beds and a few more tents? Or is there a concern such as you've expressed?
No. What I discovered was virtually nobody but you and I knew what happened in city council chambers. Even Chris Clone seems confused about what he voted unanimously on. I challenged him. I said, do you know that they reduced winter shelter capacity by 60-plus beds? And his report was, we don't have enough votes to fight this thing, which means if he can't vote on a winning ticket, he will vote with the majority. We need to reanalyze that concept. That's the beauty of Micah Posner, that Micah voted 6-1 every time, and on a good day 6-2, 5-2, if you recall. And we always thought that was powerless, that he didn't have any ability to build consensus. But now we realize that single vote means everything. That's a dissenting vote.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you to the concept. I've always told these council members.
I ran away with that theme. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're wrong. I think that actually Crone recently has been more on the 6-1 side of a lot of issues, and even in when Sandy Brown went along with stuff, and often Posner was not voting for ridiculous crap in the parks and other things. Although occasionally he was 6-1.
I'm saying I think that Chris Crone is in line is not. If he knew really what he voted on, he would be patently against it. But he just didn't make himself. If you recall, his deliberation remarks were exclusively about the bathroom thing, which had nothing to do with the vote. So he had his head. He wasn't paying attention. Voted unanimously, and when I challenged him later, said, we don't have the votes to fight these things.
Standard Crone response. That's what he's always.
He voted blindly, and Sandy Brown never looked up from whatever she was working on.
Yeah, I mean,
she didn't say a peep in the entire deliberation. What kind of a progressive candidate is that?
Well, you don't have to ask me. I can tell you. Sandy. I actually attended the Sandy Brown Chris Crone Monday meeting. You might be interested in that. They usually do it at the Coffee Roasting Company the Monday before the Tuesday City Council meeting.
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah. Well, there's I keep trying to get them to make it public, but they don't seem to make it too public.
And, where is she sitting?
They were sitting. We were all sitting. Oh, four of us were sitting at 9 o'clock. Though they said they were going to start at 8, they started at 9. Over in the corner, if you walk in, it's to the left in the coffee roasting bagelry. Bagelry downtown.
Oh, Beglery.
Yeah, not the coffee roasting company. Sorry.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Beglery.
So, I mean,
it's still too early for me, but I'll try to make it.
Don't get your hopes up that they'll be hearing much of what you say. But, I actually recorded everything that we talked about. And if I had better equipment, I may be playing it on Sunday. So if you get bored, check it out. Let me ask you a few more questions, though, regarding issues that you may not have been able to cover much of because you've been preoccupied with these other things. Storage, and then, the latest shelter boondoggle a weirdness. Really more of the same, frankly, as far as I can see. But, regarding people who are actually outside, the real people who form the majority of homeless in Santa Cruz, any connections, any comments on what's happening out there?
Like I said, I think I told you last Sunday, I'm not doing a lot of footwork right now. I have two grants to write. We're planning a storage program dinner theater fundraiser, which I'm writing the theater play, believe it or not. We're moving from one location to another. You know, we're moving from boxes into a four-suite unit along the levee. So I have not been doing a lot of street outreach. What does happen, though, is I can report this. I still staff the homeless emergency hotline, which is 234-9848. We're talking on it now. And so people call me on this line. And so what happens is, you know, a woman has been put out of a local shelter because of some, she says, you know, some dramatic thing that was not true. So she's sleeping outside with all of her stuff. She's getting a, she's putting some money together and getting a car. She's put four bins on the storage program. But recognizing the increased hardship and lack of space for women in particular. We see a lot of women outside. But this August, end of August, historically we see lots of people we've never seen before outside. We see people congregating in little cliques. A lot of drug use in these cliques, and then a lot more tent camping always pops up. We're seeing that again along Highway 1 and in various areas. It's cyclical, and right now, since I'm not, I don't have any real reports from the street, we're seeing just a general high tide in this moment, like, you know, we tend to. With a great, sorry for me to lapse back on the storage program, what we're seeing also is lots of people not having to carry their stuff around. The storage program is highly successful in the fact that with 100 people with their stuff on board, that's a huge, that's 100 times 20 gallons of material that's not on the street. And people have better gear, redundant gear, and they're able to organize their lives in a much better fashion than they had been before.
It looks like there's, it's true, of course. It looks like the safe parking program that I guess you and I had both been concerned was being put on the back burner because of no funding by the Association of Faith Communities, is now likely to, it's become a part of the city's funding plan for people, what, 50 spaces or 40 spaces, some such, for people to park out there, but not, to, of course, for the ordinary homeless person to be able to go set up a tent, right?
Right. It's funny that it's put in with the shelter reduction plan. Because it has nothing to do with, it's not the same population whatsoever. Now, that is an important thing, and it should be done, should have been done. It should have been funded by the city. Now the city's, we have no idea if they're going to fund it, what that means. I'm seeing the board of AFC in City Hall, in the chambers, meeting with government officials there. But we have no idea what that means. But what I would like to highlight relating to that is what's more true is if you're going to have a shelter crisis emergency and you're looking to support organizations, it's much more appropriately that the city would reach out to the warming center, which actually does the undertaking job of making sure that not one person has to experience hypothermia or death on the coldest nights. That we need as a community to demand that the city interacts with the warming center, and that they don't is a clarion call. It's a red flag for basic intention around, what they're really being holding themselves responsible for. Of course, we go round and around this. You know, we step back from this and you go, oh, of course, crows cross your arms, and we go, yeah, we know what the city's up to. We can write this script every fucking year. But, you know, I'm trying to build a different
vision. Let me ask regarding awareness, the people that are supporting you, the folks who've been supporting the different projects you've been involved with, Sanctuary Village, Warming Center, 24-hour, or I should say day and night storage.
Yeah.
Are they up in arms, concerned about this? Have you heard much from them indicating that they want to put more energy into this, given the fact that there's going to be, for example, no winter shelter other than, I guess, folks in their vehicles have safer places to park, maybe, you know.
Yeah. Our core supporters are completely awesome. they don't keep themselves politicized on these issues. I'm writing a volunteer and supporter awareness email today to the Google groups that might show up in your inbox. I don't know if you're – I might have removed you from those.
Yeah, send it to me.
But additionally, so what's true is my board and primary and secondary circles of support completely support our work, and I don't have to usually but let me say so that we're in a funding lull. I'm forced to raise money for the storage program immediately and then go straight into the pre-winter fundraising for warming center. So that's all. You can imagine that I'm going to double down now and ask for ever more if we are going to be the last organization standing that actually can call itself a cold weather shelter. You know what I mean? And the question is, we're reaching out to AFC, Salvation Army, and I'm actually going to be, believe it or not, reaching out to the city of Santa Cruz and the county to see how they can see themselves supporting in some way the warming center to expand capacity, because we're going to need additional spaces. We might have to open two spaces at once in Santa Cruz. I have to hire a site manager now, three-quarter time, and then additionally, I need more volunteers and just more funding. So, but besides that, I have good news for you. I wrote a grant 6 months ago for the warming center for something called physical mobility and mental health challenges capacity increase. That means we're the only program in the county that says we put a priority on people with physical mobilities. That means we assert that if you don't put a priority on them, you'll see that they become the lowest priority, which is why we have a city with wheelchairs and walkers through the winter on the sidewalk streets and in Watsonville. So we're trying to change that and demand that all programs put a priority. And then we wrote a grant to Kaiser and got a grant to help us support us in that work. So now we can actually, we've been doing that unfunded, which is impossible. It's crazy that you can look at the photographs of the Watsonville Warming Center that we've been staffing with 5, 6, 7 walkers and wheelchairs. Why aren't they down the street at the Salvation Army? Because they don't welcome them. They don't have you have to get up a set of stairs to get into the shower there. Their bunks are all smashed together, so somebody in a walker can't even access. They don't reserve bunks for people at the low bunk level for people in a wheelchair. You know, these are easy things to design. You and I would do, you know, any rational thinking person could design, improve design factors in these programs in 5 minutes.
How big a grant did you get yourself?
$20,000.
And
that's going to help me with a salary.
Uh-huh.
Not me. I'm going to hire somebody. I won't get any money. That helps us improve the wheelchair lift on our shuttle. It helps us spend more time and slow down and make sure that we can reach out and serve people in wheelchairs and with mental health capacity. That's the big one too, mental health. That's a huge umbrella. What does that look like? But that's going to help me hire somebody specifically and make sure that, you know, when we're open, we're going to make sure that everybody in a wheelchair, a walker, has a mental health issue, knows that we're open and has easy access to the program. And I hope you agree that that's a good thing.
It doesn't sound like a bad thing to me. anyway, Brent, I'm gonna roll, but I'll give you a minute to finish up if there's anything you want to add.
Yeah, you know, I have a hard time with my emotions right now. City manager Martin Bernal was crossing the intersection, and I literally 2 hours ago yelled loudly at him in public, said, 60, a reduction of 56 shelter beds in the wintertime? What do you have to say for that, Martin Bernal? Come on! And I was, you know, challenging him.
Oh, you did Robert Norse there, Brandon.
Yeah, and so I had to, then immediately, Sibley Simon was standing right in front of me, and I was like, Sibley, I'm freaking out. And I like Sibley. We don't have similar agendas, although we're trying to serve a similar population at times. But, and he really slowed down and provided some listening for me. You know, he was actually a friend in that moment, and really, really agreed with me. and just said, you know, it's okay. You
tell,
know,
listeners, tell listeners who Sibley Simon is. I don't.
Sibley Simon is the accountant of Homeless Service Center. He's also the man behind the man behind the man at 180-2020. He actually founded 180-180. He's a tech millionaire many times over who, in his retirement, has tried to improve homelessness in Santa Cruz, and now he's going to become a low-income housing developer with New Way Homes, and he's up in lots of stuff.
I'm going to leave it there, Brent, but I encourage people who want more information to give you a call at 234-9848. Am I right on that?
234-9848. And warmingcenterprogram at Gmail, warmingcenterprogram.com. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it.
Well,
good therapy session for me.
Hey, good, good. I'll put you on my bill list.
Yes, please.
You take care, man.
Later.
Bye-bye.
We won't get far.
And that was Peter Tosh, No Nuclear War. Thank you. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. The name of the show, in case you don't know, is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Bathrob Spear Robert, as I sometimes call myself. And if you have comments about the show, if you have contributions you want to make to it, if you have reports from the street you want me to air, or just want to get in touch for one reason or another, the number is 831-423-4833. So give a call, and you'll either get through to me or my machine, in which case you'll most likely get a call back if there is any way to call you back. You can also find me down at the Red Church, usually on Monday around 6, not always, but often. In fact, that's where I'm going to play a little audio now from last Monday's, I guess 2 or 3 days ago, at the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church. That's the one at Lincoln and Cedar, right next to the Farmer's Market spot on Wednesday when they do the Farmer's Marketing.
Dominican caught stealing from me last night. They stole my their phone. They stole my phone.
Bummer.
And, oh, yeah, bummer for them. And they threatened me, and the guy almost freaking, he was putting his gloves on and hit me. He knows I'm working for the sheriff, and he knows I'm CHP, and he doesn't give a fuck. So I finally got a hold of the PD last night, and we made out a report. That's the truth.
May your phone come back to you, man.
I hope so, because I don't need to be out of time.
Take it. What? Okay. Next time we talk more.
Yeah, I don't want my truck down. They stole my truck.
Dig it. So I'm coming into the Red Church. I'm rushing around looking for people that I can't find. Hey, no laughing out loud. Come on.
What's so funny, you guys? I was listening about the River Street Camp song.
Was there a River Street Camp song?
Well, the chorus of it is called River Street Camp. So I thought it was pretty funny.
Is Mike on the piano singing it, or?
I think I just heard the words come out of his mouth a few multiple seconds ago.
I missed that. Oh well. Anything happened in the last week you want to comment on?
Well, Food Not Bombs is doing well.
It's always the same.
We're having good volunteers. Yeah, everything seems to be working out again. And
are you indoors or outdoors?
I'm a little bit of both.
No hassles?
Yeah, it's just basically taking stuff to the walk-in fridge and being supervisor of the two outdoor tables of
Food Not Bombs task.
People cutting this and chopping that.
Any hassles for yourself in terms of where you sleep, wandering around during the day, what happened?
Well, I did get squirted awake this morning by a janitor.
Squirted awake.
Yes.
But he didn't piss on you.
No, he did not piss on me, but he did squirt me awake with Windex.
With Windex? He wanted to clean your glasses?
I either clean my glasses or
clean your clock.
Or, yeah, take the awful mildew smell out of my sleeping bag.
Very sweet of him.
Yes.
Did you advise him that was inappropriate behavior on his part?
Yes. Believe me, I was up on both of my feet with both of my shoes on, and he was walking away very briskly.
Where was this?
This is in a very historic area that has lots of rainforest-like environments.
City, in the city limits or elsewhere?
I would say it's around where is that place? Trader Joe's? That complex over there with the Woodstock Pizza.
I know that place.
CVS. The building right next to that.
So you were there. What time did this happen?
Sometime around 7 o'clock this morning.
Did you get any warning? Did you say anything? Get up or I'll index you?
No, I woke up to the fine mist of ammonia in my nostrils.
What did this guy look like?
He was very Hispanic.
And was he a uniformed individual?
He did have a mustache, and he liked giving out a giggle.
Did he have a uniform on?
Yeah, I think it was a Navy uniform.
It wasn't a Parker Rec Ranger.
manager or a security girl?
No, 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 no. Just a
private individual trying to help you get out.
Janitor. Just
trying to clean your glasses.
He wants to keep his job, probably.
I'm sure if he thinks his job is Windex,
his job or keep his teeth.
Well, he felt that way. That way he retreated so quickly.
Yes.
And we've been talking to
Travis.
Of course.
Thank you, Travis. Or Fish.
Or Fish. Any street reports?
And now for a little variety, I'm going to intersperse this usual Red Church report with sort of articles from the paper. Here's one from, looks like today's Santa Cruz Urinal, actually the Santa Cruz Sentinel. It's headlined, Winter Shelter Plans Cause Stir. Housing Developer Public Outreach Requirements Upped. And I'm noticing the, among the Santa Cruz's most contentious topics, homeless facilities and housing development discussions filled the docket at Tuesday's Santa Cruz City Council meeting. This is a story by Jessica York. While the city steps back on its efforts to locate a temporary homeless shelter, that is to say, has nothing to say whatsoever about it, really, the council and public questioned the city's backup plan to remodel past year's winter shelter program through extra beds at the Homeless Service Center. And again, as Brent Adams commented, this isn't a winter shelter program where you can drop in. You have to be a part of a pathway to housing unless they're changing the criteria at the Homeless Services Center, or lack of services center, as I call it. Extra tents at the River Street Camp, and that's a place where you have to also get into the program. And it's not an emergency drop-in place. And, in fact, you can't even walk up there or walk away. You have to be transported by shuttle. And then, finally, a safe parking program, which isn't for, again, people who are, most of homeless people who are on foot, but only for those with vehicles. So this whole idea that there's any winter shelter program at all is a fancy. It's a fanciful. It's a lie, actually. I mean, why not speak truth here? Councilwoman Rochelle Naroyan asked city manager's office staff about what type of oversight the city would have over the disparate efforts, whether or not all would remain accessible during daylight hours. And in fact, I don't think any of them will be, except for the River Street Campground, and that only to the residents that are inside, not to the community generally or their friends or their visitors. Again, this kind of special treating the homeless as some kind of toxic substance that has to be handled very carefully, isolated, and contained. But again, it's not winter shelter. It is a particular program that they're continuing rather than provide winter shelter, and so they're lying about it. Maybe they're just confused. I don't want to be generous that way, though. Whether or not local homeless people should be given preference over newcomers, and that Brent Adams discussed that, and she was told the details of the winter shelter operations were still in development, adding that limiting who can access the shelters could run afoul of discrimination laws. And you heard that, too, before from Brent. I'd really like that examined because I see people who are currently suffering out on the streets who are here, so my hope is that we could craft some sort of rules and regulations that give those folks who are here today a preference, Naroyan said. Rochelle Naroyan is hardly the person to be talking with great care and love about homeless people because, as I've said numerous times on the air, she championed a program to criminalize people in their RVs at night. Not just who are sleeping, but anybody even who parks their van and walks away from it anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz. Now, that was pushed back by some of us. But she's not interested in this, except as a way of criticizing the program that currently exists, because I think, what do I think? I think she's just generally hostile to these kinds of programs, suspicious of them, and represents this sort of paranoid, privileged element in the community. When questioned on the logistics of adding new bed spaces to existing facilities, principal management analyst Susie O'Hara said that a 16-foot-wide path at the camp, which was previously a fire path, I believe, or the fire engine, or for the shuttle, I'm not sure which, could be reduced and large dumpster site on-site removed. You'll hear another opinion from a woman who has spent time there, Mary, who's been outside as well, who takes a different view after this. I've read this article and after the Red Church interviews are played. At the Pauley loft, an unused pantry space could be converted into a 20-bed addition for the winter, she added. Again, a 20-bed addition for those who are in a program, unless they change their rules. And, of course, it would be, I mentioned at the city council two nights ago, why not use some of this $30 million bond that they're getting, although Brent has claimed that that's not involved with any of these particular expansions, but they must have the money they're using for these expansions, to restore meals that were removed from the homeless lack of services center back in June of 2015. Meals for the entire homeless community. Anyone who's hungry could come in. That's gone. There's no such thing now. You have to be in their programs. Continuing, some community speakers questioned how enough people could be fit into existing locations because it's already crammed at the River Street Campground or the Boneyard Barbed Wire Deluxe. If the operations were the most cost-effective, that is to say, spending, as Brent has pointed out, $80,000 or $90,000 a month on this is a huge amount of money for 60 people for a month who are living in tents. And if there are reaching enough recipients, something that Brent and I also brought up, pointing out that even if you did have a restoration of the winter shelter program from last year, which only served about 100 people, maybe 110, that leaves hundreds and hundreds of people outside who are guaranteed no kind of amnesty or protection from criminalization and harassment by both police, rangers, and vigilantes. Dora Berlang, a downtown streets team worker and River Street Camp shuttle driver, urged the council to keep the River Street encampment going due to the good she sees it's doing its residents. Sure, do it, keep it open, but what about the rest? What about the huge amount of money that's being spent? I mean, you've heard it from Brent, and it's hard to deny his perspective on this. Some of these people never thought they'd call a place a home again. Yeah, it's a tent, they're on platforms, but it's home for them. They can leave their belongings there and not worry that they're going to come back and that they're not going to be there. They have showers, they have meals, they have conversations. Don't take it away from us. So perhaps he lives there. I guess he does. He's a downtown streets team worker and River Street Camp shuttle driver. It doesn't mention that he lives there, but the us may mean him as well. Also, the question arises for me, and I kind of tried to sound this out with Brent, but didn't really get much of an answer. Doesn't this kind of produce a lot of resentment against this group of people who are living there, who are sort of now suddenly specially privileged? Their tents, their camp, are safe from police harassment. In fact, they're surrounded by cops, I suppose, for this, supposedly for their protection. There are three levels of policing, the internal security people, the first alarm security that are right outside, and then the police station, mobile police station parked nearby. Whereas people who are setting up their own tents on the levee have to risk their property being seized and stolen by the same Parks and Rec rangers. I guess Parks and Rec rangers are not involved with the River Street campground, but it's the same city funding, authorizing, training the same people. That's the part of this article, Winter Shelter Plans Cause Stir, in the Thursday Sentinel that actually covers this issue. Let's get back to the Red Church and some of the voices from there.
The radio. Thank you. Any reports from the street? Street reports of any kind? No. No reports. Any reports from the Chronicle or from the street?
Not today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any reports? Any street reports for free radio? Anything you want to say for the, to the people? Yeah, stuff that's happened to you outside, things you think people should know about, life on the streets, if you're outside.
Hey. Well, maybe I'll talk about it later. I'm just getting
used to it. I'm just seeing how everything works. So I don't know everything yet. But I find the people very kind, very sweet.
No ticketing from the cops?
Oh, no, nothing like that for me, no.
Are you sleeping outside?
No.
So you're fortunate in that regard. And we've been talking, what's your name? Do you want to say? You don't have to say.
Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm Robert. Cheers. Thank you. She'll be on free radio on Thursday night. I'll give you a card if you want.
Thank you.
What are you growing in your garden?
Hopefully the strawberries will come in.
I see.
That's all.
All right, then. We'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any reports from the street?
Nope.
Thank you.
I got my ID. I'm about to get my social, and then I'll be fine. That's the report.
Okay, good. Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Any street reports? Thank you. Hey, man, any reports from the street?
Nothing in the street, but a guy at Palmer died the other day.
Tell me about that.
His Robert Burns. He wore shorts. He used to sit outside in front of the Palmer like most days.
Did he have a street name? Or?
No, that was his name, Robert. We called him Robert.
How old was he? What did he die of?
70, about 70, something like that.
Did you know him for long? Or?
Yeah, I knew him for a long time.
And anything people should remember about him that you want people to know?
That's a guy. He's a good guy. Good dude.
Yeah, good. And we've been talking with.
Sorry to hear him go. Sad to hear him go. See him go.
Matt. Thank you, Matt. All right. Any reports from the street, sir?
Yeah. They have new cops out there that are just jackasses trying to be tough guys. You would not believe how childish some of them act out there. It's unbelievable. Going up and saying, "Are you still around here? You still around here?" I said, "Look, I'm not going to be bullied." And he just kept acting like a juvenile, unintelligent, a bully, frankly. The new cop had him last night come out there, and they go get the wrong guy. And we're telling him, stupid, that's not the right guy, you know?
Do you remember the names of any of these new cops?
No, I should have got it, but yeah, he was just, you know, I obeyed basic orders and stuff, but he doesn't have any right to tell me to leave an area or something. He's not the courts.
Where did this happen?
Pacific Avenue, right where we were playing. We were just playing music, and then one of our friends was going wild, and he put his hands on a girl, and some of the people chased him around a little bit to get him away from her. And then the cop goes after one of the people who was restraining the girl, who actually saved my guitar from the guy who was crazy, who picked up my guitar and tried to run off. You know, so I kind of owed it to step in and say, hey, that's not the right guy. And then he didn't give a damn. He was just, yeah, he didn't care. He wasn't there to do anything. He's just, you know, trying to be.
When did this happen?
I'm going to say about 8 o'clock, maybe 9 o'clock at night last night. We were just out there on the avenue. We'd been playing all night. It'd been a beautiful night.
Will you be playing again tonight?
Yes, we shall. Yes, we shall. We had a lot of girl power out there, more girl power than the Powerpuff Girls. It was awesome. It was just awesome.
Power outside the Palomar.
Yes, that's right. In that general, we were in front of Del Williams, I think, at that time. Good night to get away from in front of the Palomar if we didn't have to be. And but yeah, we'll be at the Palomar, of course.
And we've been talking with
Ricardo.
Thank you, Ricardo.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right, man. Any reports from the street? Any street reports?
Yeah. I got pushed off by the cops the other day doing artwork down here. I wasn't even flying a sign, nothing. I was just sitting there doing artwork, minding my own business, sitting on the street. They wanted to give me a $150 ticket.
Where was this?
It was right on Pacific, down by the Catalyst. I was just sitting there enjoying some music, listening to the music out of the Catalyst, drawing. I wasn't even asking nobody for nothing. I wasn't doing nothing, bothering nobody. I was trying to sit out of the way on, like, closest to the road as I could off the sidewalk.
A cop or a ranger?
Cop. Santa Cruz PD.
You know his name?
I'm not sure, but he was kind of stocky, had dark hair, real young. He looked younger than me. I'm 26, so, like, he's just growing his balls, acting big, you know, flexing his muscles.
What did he say to you?
He told me to get the hell off the sidewalk, and if I didn't move, that he was going to ticket me again, and he was going to make sure he ran me out of town.
Now, he had ticketed you before?
Yeah, he ticketed me a week ago. Like, I just moved here to town. Like, I moved back to town. I lived here for 4 years in the past. And he just ran me out, like, gave me bad vibes. Like, I didn't move back here to deal with that. Like, I work. I have a full-time job. I just work. I do carpentry, like freelance carpentry work, masonry. I'm a certified mason and welder and carpenter. But, you know, it's just, it gives me, like, no pride in my town when I get treated like that. Like, I'm just down on my luck a little bit right now. Work's not as steady as I hope to be.
How long have you left town for?
I left town for 2 years, and I just came back. Like, I've been home for almost a month now. But it's just crazy how much things have changed in 2 years.
Tell me about the changes.
It's bad. There's a lot of bad drugs around, and they're still hustling the homeless. Like, take care of the problems, not the people who are out here trying to make an honest living because they're struggling. I'm an artist. I play guitar. I play drums. I do artwork. And it's pretty bad when you can't even be an artist in the town you love. Like, I moved back here because I love Santa Cruz. It's the only place I'd rather be. But I'd rather, I don't want to be here if I'm going to get treated like dirt.
Any witnesses around when this happened?
Yeah, there was a couple of guys around, like other homeless men.
What was their reaction?
Their reaction was pretty much the same. They were like, come on, man, like, he's not doing nothing. He's just drawing. He's not even asking for money. He's not spanging.
Seated within 14 feet of a building?
Yes, sir.
Criminal.
Yes, sir. You know, it's just bad. You can't even sit down. You can't even rest your feet if you've been walking all day.
But it's good exercise to keep moving at all times.
That's what they say. But, you know, the body needs rest just as much as it needs motion. A body in motion tends to break down faster than a body that is in motion then takes frequent breaks.
Well, rent a hotel room.
With no money, how am I going to rent a hotel room when work isn't consistent and steady?
Or as the police officer would say, it's not my problem.
Yeah, I've gotten that too. He said, we'll buy a bus ticket to get you out of town, but we're not going to help you live.
Interesting. The same cop said this or somebody else?
No, different cops have said it to me. The Rangers have said it to me. They said that they have a homeward-bound program that the police and the Catholic Church do that'll actually send you back to where you're from. That way they don't have to deal with you anymore.
And where are you from?
I'm from the state of New York, so that's quite a long voyage.
It's upstate New York?
Yeah, I'm from up by Buffalo, up by the Canadian border.
And we've been talking with?
Joshua Rave. My friends call me Smurf. I'm just kind soul, man. I just give stuff away. If I have it, I give you my shirt off my back. Even if I don't have another one.
Thank you, Smurf.
Thank you, man. I hope you have a good night.
You too. Showtime will be on Thursday night. Madam, should I say dog lady?
Well, I don't want to be called dog lady.
Oh, puppy girl.
We need to plant more marijuana seeds.
Thank you.
Oh, I know.
Say that again?
She's 15 years old, and she deserves a quinceañera. She's been through hell. That's a 15 birthday party.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, the quinceañera, that's what they give. They don't do anything like that for us white girls.
Well, I will leave you after the quinceañera pooch. We've been listening to the thoughts of...
Susan Worth.
Thanks, Susan. Any reports from the street?
Just spread love, brother.
Thank you.
And immediately after the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of Tuesday, and again the issue of the River Street Camp, the lack of winter shelter, the lack of respect and just taking into account the survival needs and the human reality needs of the vast majority of people outside with no shelter, here's Mary talking about these issues.
Oh, I'm outside the shitty council or city council.
I really want to go there.
It's 7:05.
This is about me about to be interviewed.
Very briefly. Have a seat while you're all I'm interviewed.
I don't want to try to stand up when I'm asked.
Yeah, standing. Good. We're talking with.
I'm sorry.
We are talking with.
Oh.
Your name is
Mary.
And Mary, you spoke at city council. Can you summarize what you said and what kind of hope you had? Well. If you had any hope for the
council. I have no hope.
Of course.
Well, actually, I wouldn't be here if I had hope.
There are just a lot of things I want to change.
Now, what concerns do you particularly have about what happened here tonight?
What happens here tonight is that they started with unrealistic numbers. They're ignoring reality, which is true data of how many people out there need shelter. And they're overinflating what they can do and feeling all proud of, what, was it 60? 60 beds this winter?
60 beds? Now, come on now.
Yippee-ki-yay. You know? And I'm the person who's walking up and down that levee and interacting with people and counting heads and counting camps and going, wow, this really sucks. This is not working.
Well, I know that if you look at the winter shelter last year, which I'm no fan of, mind you, but they took people in on a first-come, first-served basis, whereas now they're going to be 60, well, let's say 40, maybe 60 plus 20 more in the camp that will be permanently ensconced. So you won't be able to walk up and get a place. So that's why I said there are less places than before. For the 60 people or the 80 people who are lucky to be in the camp,
yeah,
they will have a place. But for the rest of the population, the number of people that the winter shelter will serve will be significantly less.
Well, what winter shelter would that be? They weren't talking about those programs. And according to Captain Louder, who's the head of the Salvation Army, he hasn't heard a peep out of the city. He said last year they only called him a month before. How disrespectful is that? That just offends me. These people have been housing the homeless and helping the homeless for, what, 100 years? I don't know the actual history and the dates, but they wait until a month before to let him know he's going to be entertaining 65 people a night?
Well, I think, I hear you, and I think that last year there were two shelters.
Arrogant.
Yeah, there were two shelters last year. One was the shelter here on
VFW.
And one at the VFW.
Plus we had the benchlands. Plus we had the 30 or 40 campsites just above the bedland, the benchlands going under Highway 1. Then we had several campsites sometimes in groups of 20, 23. Whether they stayed on and the one stretch I'm thinking of, but now we've got a ton of people I haven't even counted or encountered who have been forced out of the area north of Highway 1 into a place where the walkway is maybe 5 feet wide and there's a tall hill and a steep embankment, and I don't know what's going on up there. I haven't had time to get up there and walk through that. Emergency services can't get in there.
You yourself live outside.
Yes, I go walk up there. Why not?
Have you been ticketed outside yourself?
No. I don't get ticketed because I don't go where I'm not supposed to. As a member of Downtown Streets, I am, and the levy team, when I have that shirt on, I am allowed to legally go all the way down to the river.
Right, but when you sleep at night, is there a legal place for you to sleep?
I am actually in a shelter. I'm very fortunate that way. Very small shelter.
And are you talking about the River Street campground?
No, I'm talking about Faith Community, which houses 18 people.
So you're lucky that way. Well, if you were to estimate the number of people who get sheltered by churches, what would you estimate in the city?
I have no idea. As far as I know, just the 18 of us are sheltered by churches.
I'm talking about sleep. Association of Faith Communities Church.
Yes,
churches.
I'm talking about roof over your head sleep. I don't know that any churches do that. They may. I don't know.
Very few allow vehicles in their parking lots overnight.
Well, you know, and the safe parking program, okay, it's very important. I've talked to people. They're miserable. They have no place to park. Tons of them, you know, and so they will have safe parking. But how does that, you know, there you are sitting locked in a car in the pouring rain. You can't even open the windows to get fresh air. That is not...
But you get carbon monoxide if you need it. That's very good.
It's
healthy for you.
On the heat. So,
the problem I see with that is that everybody complains about they don't have money for gas, right? So if they're talking about putting the safe parking out in the county, then how are the people going to get to town? Because that's already people are bumming out where they live on Delaware and stuff.
Probably Santa Cruz creates 25% of its own homeless problem because they do not have two simple things, storage and bus passes available to people who are still couch surfing, who still have friends who will put up with them, who are grasping the reality that if they don't get their butts to work, they're going to be on the street, you know, and so... By not having those two simple programs available to them.
And the two programs are?
The programs for storage and for bus passes.
And the other voice you're hearing, of course, is mine, but also that of Keith McHenry, a Food Not Bombs activist who along with a bunch of us, spoke at the oral communications period on Tuesday, urging the city to open up bathrooms at the Loudoun Nelson Center and elsewhere around the city, which, as Brent Adams pointed out, is it's not a secondary concern, but it's a small part of a much larger concern, which is to acknowledge and protest and act against or in favor, at least in some other direction, of the city's complete ignoring of the both the fall and winter needs of the broader homeless community.
That they can get around. You know, you can require things of people who are homeless. You can insist that they go and get a card at EDD and use their services and prove it, you know, in exchange for this. So those people are falling out into the homeless population because they run out of places to stay because they can't get anywhere except on foot to get a job, and they have no place to keep their stuff.
What do you make of Brent's day and night storage?
Oh, I like it. I supported him. He said he wanted a slow start. I went around and just gave people the information in a very measured way, and he said that worked, and so fine. Yeah, I know people who are using it and are very satisfied. A lot of people initially were concerned. They're concerned about security, you know. But the first time I went, I didn't know the guy who was there. And I said, can I step up and look into the vehicle to see how he'd react? And he said, no. And I went, okay, this might work. You know, so people's possessions are safe. That means the world to them.
Mary, how long have you been a Santa Cruz person?
A Santa Cruz person since 1983.
And were you outside then, or were you indoors?
No. I've only been homeless. I had this horrendous accident. So as soon as I get around to getting the surgery I need, I hope to be off the streets in a couple of months. But obviously, this was a good job for me to get. You know, I'm retired, and I'm just dumbfounded by the stupidity, frankly. The whole homeless service system. It seems like most of those people don't have management experience. Why not?
When you were working, did you know that this whole little homeless weird trip was going on?
You know, I've always, you know, I just say hi to anybody. Right. I'll talk to anybody. I'm interested in people who are mentally ill. I like listening about their alternate realities, you know? So, yes, before this happened, I was aware of homeless people. I would often give them whatever I could help with. Oops, sorry. Food.
But by becoming homeless yourself, you ended up learning about how the homeless service, you, like most
reality.
People. Yeah, most people would tell
homeless
you.
Homeless services are taking care of it.
Right,
well, they're not.
That's what people think, right, yeah. And that's what you thought before.
Yes.
You.
Well, why not?
Yeah.
We're paying taxes to have this work. Right. You know, to see, and so I read about the armory. I still haven't been in the armory. I don't know what's going on with the armory.
There's no armory at the moment in terms of the services.
Armory, but no one can see it.
Right.
It's a building that no
yeah,
one
it's a building.
See.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I know that now. And I had someone say to me, well, they should just take the armory and make apartments and give them to us. And I said, why should they? Just looked kind of dumbfounded. I said, nobody ever gave me a free housing, you know? What are you willing to do for that? It's like no one, they assume we aren't willing to do anything or that we're helpless and hopeless and we can't do anything. You know, why aren't conditions put on this? If you want to stay at winter shelter, help out for a couple of hours. You know, do some chores, do some cleanup. Don't just sit there and watch the five people who volunteer. That was a real problem for me at winter shelter. Why are these people sitting around watching me work?
You know? You're so attractive.
Why aren't they required to do community service? The people in downtown streets love it that they're working again.
Yeah, right.
They love it.
You get something to
it make, yes, it feels good. It feels good to them to be working again, to have something to do. Half of them come in and say, I'm picking up trash, going around picking up trash anyway. I'd rather like to get something for it.
Yeah, something. It doesn't have
and
to
yet
be
we are judged by the lowest and least, which are the 18-20% of us who are just lost to drugs and alcohol, and those who have mental illness. And that range goes from just plain nuts to, you know, people suffering from depression and stuff. And now it's okay to have PTSD and stuff. I'm sorry. I don't sound compassionate here, but I have watched people up around who hang around Coral Street going out of their way to be crazy.
The shelter that you have, does it have bathroom, open bathrooms 24 hours?
Well, you mean for us?
Yes.
Well, we stay in churches, so they have bathrooms.
But yes. Not 24 hours.
Not 24 hours.
If she has to stay in a shelter 24 hours, they have to leave during the day.
Yes, we get up and we usually leave by 7.
But at nighttime, do you have access to bathrooms?
Yes.
Okay. Well, not all of them do.
Well, I don't understand that.
I don't either. That's why I'm asking.
I was going to suggest to the city council that they spend 24 hours going back to the bathroom only using public facilities.
Right. Oh, that's a great idea.
Just a little interactive program. They're not used to me. You know, I'm not just one of those let's all love unconditionally and boundaryless. I think Pals Without Boundaries are just minefield planes, you know. No.
But I
may be surprisingly tough in some of my attitudes towards the homeless, but you know what? They need to get up off their asses and stop acting like helpless children waiting for life to happen. And I have said this to them. Excuse me. I overwhelm you because I am a person who is living her life despite the fact that she is homeless. And you all seem to be waiting until you get a home to live your life. It can be gone before you figure that one out. So, I don't know how all of this is going to happen. I just know that there are things I don't like, and I'm going to try to change them.
Hooray for you.
And you will give me a number you could be reached at?
I will. I'll give it to you right now, but you need to have a pencil.
I do, and I will.
Mary.
Speaker, who was in city council, actually tried to address the council. And, hey, good night, Keith. What are your thoughts, sir?
Well, just that the people doing the camp planning project to increase the camp by 20 tents are probably hiding the fact that they are going to be removing other services, like especially the washing facilities and the bathing facilities, so they can put in those 20 tents. And that's the rumor going around. And I hope it's not true, because that would be terrible. Slipping with 70 V-balls, smelling like you know what. So, and the Homeless Services Center cannot take the overload. You can't just throw another 70 people out of the Homeless Services Center to take showers. It ain't going to work. So,
you've tried both these places yourself?
Oh, yes, of course. I've been here for 40 years, so I know what's going on.
Have they gotten, I call it the Homeless Lack of Services Center, but has that gotten better in the last 5 or 10 years, worse, different? What would you say?
It's okay. You can't count on it to live there or anything. But you can't get a decent meal the way you used to be able to. All you can do is go wash there, really. I mean,
can you just walk in even if you're not a member of the, if you're not in the Pauley law?
Anyone can walk in and take a shower.
And that's only best.
However, sometimes the line is a couple of hours long, so you may not want to do it. So,
are the bathrooms open 24 hours or not?
No, they're not. Well, not to outsiders. They're only open. The showers are only a few hours a day, actually.
What about the bathroom just to use the toilet? Are they open?
Only go in during a certain hours. If you're inside, you're living there, that's different. But
do you know what the hours are for visiting?
No, I do not know. I do not know what the hours are for taking, what the limits are for taking bathrooms.
There are people
who are taking, using the
toilets.
Using
the bathrooms during the day.
I know the limits for taking showers, but I don't know the ones for getting into the toilets. I don't think it's any different.
Can you visit people who are living in the Pauley Loft? Because I know in the Boneyard, Riverstreet.
I can't do it. Yeah. I never tried to even bother doing it. I don't know if they'd let you do it, but I don't try.
And you've also tried the River Street campground. It was mentioned.
River Street campground's a really good thing. It gets a lot of people secure for a very low cost. If they do it right, they might be paying too much now and having too many employees, but it's a wonderful program otherwise. It's developed a very nice little homeless community, and they're not all just homeless. They're hobos. They like to work, but they can't always get enough work to pay for the high rents in this place, which are atrocious, you know. I mean, you just can't get jobs that pay that much money.
Do you know most of the folks in the campground, or just a few? Or?
Well, I know a lot of them.
And are they mostly local, mostly from out of town, mixture?
No, mostly long-timers.
Mostly long-timers. papers. Now, what was said by, I think, either Tina or...
A lot of them are old.
Right on.
What was said? Some of them are wheelchair.
Dig it.
How do they really deal in the world when you're in a wheelchair and sleeping homeless?
In regard to what you were saying before, which is your concern that they might not be able to fit in 20 more tents there, what was said up front there by the staff, they said that, well... You can. What they're going to do is allow the fire lane to be used for that purpose.
Yes, it's one that the shuttle bus drives down to let all people into park. And there's not room for 20 tents there, that's for sure.
So you think so?
It's going to have to be a lot more than that. They're going to have to take pretty much every extra square foot of space available there, and probably they're really planning on getting rid of the shower thing. So, which is a portable unit. It's a trailer. The showers, and then half of them aren't even being used. And now they're going to bring in an extra 20 people and take away the showers so no one of them can be used, even though we have 20%.
Well, there's always the river nearby.
50% more people. Yeah, there's always a river nearby. No, they just emptied the river today, and it's a mud flat, basically.
Well, that's a new shelter area, you see. You could just go down there
and go to the mud flat.
Have a mud bath, right.
Yes.
And I won't ask you your name unless you want to volunteer it, but anything else you want to say? Any other thoughts?
No, that's good enough for right now. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you very much.
Cool.
Yeah, it should be played on free radio on...
And that all happened outside the Santa Cruz City Council meeting afterward. As, the sun dropped lower in the sky. Just a couple of quick notes. For those who are interested, the Public Safety Committee, which is supposed to oversee the police and fire, but actually... mostly serves as a cheering section or a rubber stamping for those departments, or at least for the police department, or at least it doesn't concern itself with the issues that I continue to raise again and again: racial profiling, class profiling, use of force, lack of accountability and transparency. They do have their audio finally posted online, so if you want to hear what they're... I think they have two to four open hearings a year. And you can actually go listen to them on the city's website. On Sunday, I'm going to be probably going through a number of things, although I often promise stuff that I don't do because of timing conflicts and other problems that come up. But I'm hoping to do some further Salinas RV look-see and see what's going on there. I've got, We've made a recording of an entire session with Sandy Brown and Chris Crone, two city council members who supposedly have a regular Monday meeting, or it depends on who you talk to about it, if you a scheduled Monday meeting, if you schedule it, or maybe they'll be there if they can, you know, I don't want to say if they feel like it, that doesn't sound good, but maybe it's the way it is. Some interviews at the rent control, the part of the forum of the Democratic Women's Club happening last week that concerned rent control, some street interviews, perhaps a slice from the Conscience and Action meeting, which is planning a protest, and then a very kind of a grim story of the seizure of a baby from a homeless couple, and their struggle now to get it back, and we'll be getting into that on Sunday. So tune in at 9:30 if you'd like to hear what's going on. Let's go out on Barrel of Pain by Crosby, Stills, Nash, and I think Young as well, but sometimes those guys drop off the last guy. No, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Barrel of Pain.
When I lived in San Francisco, I could... see the Farallon Islands from my kitchen window. And it was a very beautiful sight until I realized that they'd been dropping barrels of nuclear waste at the bottom of the ocean right there where we live. So I wrote a song about it because it pissed me off, same as everybody else. But you know something? Maybe the success of the vote... maybe voting is the way to go. The Nuclear Freeze Initiative sure thinks so, I'll tell you that. It's one from the No Nukes movie called A Barrel of Pain. ¶¶
and you don't want to
hear it.
Nobody wants to
hear it.
Hey, you know what I imagine?
Hear it.
You know my grandfather was here today.
Hear it.
God rest her. Yeah.
Hear it.
She'd have to say to me, "Mom,
hear it."
No, don't like that kind of piano. I tell you why. You see, she know people.
Hear it.
People so know how to suffer.